Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
How few of the human race have ever had an opportunity of choosing a system of government for themselves?
They're acting like they're bigger than government.
Mark Reardon.
Pay attention to science, 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 and science.
Whoa, whoa, slow down. I'm a scientist, and that was still fast.
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. We are all gathered and assembled and ready to go. Sue Thomas in the house. How are you this afternoon? Did you ride the electronic bike? Wait a second, the microphone's not on. The
I forgot my headphones.
Oh,
again.
That's why you didn't know that the microphone was on, because you didn't have your headphones.
That would be why.
2 days in a row, Sue.
I know. Dave, there's something wrong with me. But yes, I did ride the e-bike. I'm completely obsessed with it. I'm going to ride it in on either tomorrow or Friday and put either one of you or both of you at a time on it.
You want to come in?
Yeah.
You're going to ride it in?
Yes.
Okay.
It's going to be a sweaty and disgusting mess on my part, but if we can all handle it, I want you to try it. I really do.
Do you have to have cycling shoes with it or not?
No, I normal pedals because I just want to be able to, you know.
Okay, I do want to try it. I think that might be interesting.
I have you try it because you're an actual cyclist or have been.
Well,
I just hope it survives downtown.
It will.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. It's it's built
Sue,
for it.
That was a crime joke.
Yeah. I don't get those because I like the city and I'm not afraid.
I do too.
Hey, Dave used to live in the city.
I love the city.
Whenever I make, here's what I've learned in the past few, whenever I make a joke, a crack about violence in the city, I hear a groan over there.
Yep.
So. I make cracks about the city, but I do. Sue lives in the old neighborhood that I lived in Holly Hills, and it's a beautiful, beautiful area.
My parents still live close to
there.
So.
And I miss Carondelet Park. I really do. I love Carondelet Park.
Yeah, it's a great place. It really is.
It's one of, and I've said this before, maybe even with you. I think it's one of those little parks in St. Louis that is underutilized because when I grew up, it was interesting today. I played golf today, Sue.
How did it go? Wait, you're in a good mood. What's happening?
It was terrible. I'll tell you that in a second. But I played at Forest Hills Country Club because I belong to several country clubs in the area. I mean,
I bet they're just lining up to take you, Mark.
I can't keep track sometimes of my dues. I let Becky deal with all that stuff. But my friend John Lynch invited me out there, and I thought we were going to play 18. Thank God we only played 9.
It's hot.
Parred 3 holes. Wasn't that hot out there? Parred 3 holes.
This is great.
This is great, except for the other 6 holes. They were not so great.
Bogey, or did we do worse?
Bogey would have been awesome. Okay. Double bogey would have been awesome. Triple bogey on some of those holes would have been awesome.
Well, I try to tell him, Sue, that, you know, 3 out of 9 in baseball, that's really good.
That's a really good point, Dave. Not sure it's relevant, but yes.
I'll keep working. But, you know, it was the only this is so different than the past few years because when I did give up the bike, I started playing incessantly. And so last year at this time was awesome. We were coming out of COVID. You, for a while, especially in Illinois, they staggered the tee times. They made you go in your cart by yourself. And I walked today. I actually like walking the course. That's what we did today. So I have nothing against that. But, I mean, I was playing all the time and having fun with it. The reason I backed off, I told you, I just wasn't having as much fun. And I did have fun today, but it was good to see John and hang out and just get on the course.
Right, it's a good time to chat. right?
It is.
Golf would be great for that, I would assume.
It is great for that. And we, you know, especially walking the course because we had plenty of time talking in between our shanked shots, although he played very, very well. So it was fun and great to get out there. But the reason I brought it up, I almost forgot. I drove the way I went to that country club. It was right down, I finally get to Manchester Road, and then I go to Baxter. And that's right where I used to live, right there in West County, in the Wildwood subdivision. So it was a little journey of nostalgia, Sue.
Oh,
driving by the old neighborhood and the old house, and I hearkened back, and here's my memories from those days, because remember I told you I cut lawns in the neighborhood, and there was a little Hill Trail country club, I guess they called it. It was the pool. It wasn't a country club.
Right.
It was
like the neighborhood pool.
It was the neighborhood pool.
Loved it.
I cut the grass at the neighborhood pool.
How much did you get for that?
That's a very good question. That is a very good question. I think I was compensated somewhat fairly for 1981
and 1982.
I remember
everything.
I don't remember that.
I remember I got $15 to type the invoices. I think my brother, who was paid to mow the island, the islands that we had a boulevard, we lived on Longview Boulevard in Kirkwood, and he got that gig from Keenan when Keenan retired. And I think he probably still has all that money. But if I called him right now and said, how much did you get paid? He said, well, $25 an island, blah, blah, blah.
He could tell you.
Huh? Yeah. Oh, I guarantee you he could.
So I quit that. This is an interesting story. Dave, I don't know if I ever shared this with you. So I'm doing several lawns in the neighborhood. I'm doing the pool club. And I had a reputation back then. My sisters would make fun of me. Everyone would. I wear black concert T-shirts. I had
moppy.
Yeah, and
that's
jeans.
That's not smart.
And jeans. Oh, no, it was dumb.
Happening?
Well, okay. I was 15
cool.
years old. No, I was 15 years old. And then This is somewhat embarrassing. Dave knows this. So maybe it's an Italian heritage thing. I don't know because I don't know all my ethnicity. But I have relatively, how do I put this? There's a lot of hair on my body and
on my
legs.
Suit.
Right, right.
Yes.
Mm. So I was embarrassed by that when I was a teenager.
But
and I was a fat kid too. So I didn't wear shorts. I wore jeans.
And well, now I feel bad about the
you
whole
should.
Thing.
You should. I got through it though, Sue.
All right. You came out all right.
So, there was an opportunity. This was right around 1983. I think it was a senior in high school. And I had a good friend here whose father, his name is Ken Deutsch. I talk about him occasionally. I ended up at his house the night of the blizzard in 82.
Oh, sure.
Stuck in Ladue. Well, his father was Chuck Berry's accountant.
Okay, hold on.
One of Chuck Berry's accountants.
Oh, my gosh.
So because of that, so here, let me take you back to 1980. I think this was 82 or 83. We could look it up easily.
It was 82 when the blizzard was.
Right, but I'm talking about this next incident.
Oh, okay.
So I was cutting the grass at this club.
Minding your own business.
My neighbor two doors down was the guy that had hired. He was like the president of the club or whatever. And I think I felt at the time, now again, I'm a kid, I'm making dumb decisions, but I felt like I wasn't getting the level of reaction to the complaints about what was going on with the lawnmower. There were things that were happening. Okay, just keep that in the back of your mind there in a second. And because some of this is very sketchy, and I'm just going to tell you the story the way I remember it. There was an opportunity that came up to go to Chuck Berry's house, to get on a bus with him, and to go down to the Arch to watch him play during the VP fair.
Okay? That's kind of a big deal.
It
That's
is.
Cool.
So my parents were out of town. I remember this. I'm, you know, at home. And somehow I quit that job. And I quit that job because of frustration, but also because, and I think I made a good decision. Sue's like looking at me in a disappointed way.
I can only imagine.
I had the opportunity to go see Chuck Berry and meet Chuck Berry. So I took that opportunity.
Rather than working.
That may be true. That may be true.
See.
But there was a grievance. Maybe I filed it with the lawn cutters union or something like that. The grievance was not attended to, and I said, you know what, I'm going to see Chuck Berry, which, by the way, was a great decision because
you made the right choice.
He had a house in Clayton at the time, so we go down there.
Yeah.
We go into the house. He drives the bus that goes down
he
to
drove
the. He
the
drove
bus.
The bus. Now
oh,
I have
awesome.
Remember Steve Shankman came in here, Dave,
sure.
a few years ago. Steve, Contemporary Productions. He is the guy, one of the guys with Michael Stanberg behind The Factory, which is the new place in Chesterfield. So I'm telling Steve this story, you know, just a few years ago. Oh, man, I'm on this bus with Chuck Berry, and, you know, he backs onto the Arch grounds. Like, he pulls down on Memorial Drive, and then he's backing this tour bus onto the Arch grounds.
Which would never happen today.
Well, no.
There's no way.
It wasn't even supposed to happen then. So Shankman goes, oh, I know the rest of this story because I was on the walkie-talkie on the other side because someone from the Park Service is saying, hey,
we got this guy that says he's Chuck Berry and he's trying to pull onto the arch grounds.
Gosh.
And sure enough, he pulls down. We're right down, you know, the stage is underneath the arch. And he pulls the bus, and I was very lucky. I got to watch the show from on the stage.
That's awesome.
And it was a daytime. It was not a nighttime. I think he performed maybe 2 p.m. or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
That was the first job I quit, Sue.
What was the grievance? I'm kind of and I love that they didn't have a grievance with you. You had a grievance with your employer. And what was that? Do you remember?
I don't remember. The way I remember it, again, your mind plays tricks on you decades later, is that I was asking for things that just were in relation to repairing the lawnmower. I don't know what it was.
I mean, you needed help.
Maybe I was just looking for an excuse to go see Chuck Berry. I have no idea. But that was my unceremonious end to my lawn cutting, you know, history there at that Hill Trail pool and tennis club.
That he backed the bus up onto the arch grounds because he drove you there. That's just incredible.
It was fantastic.
Wow.
He told me that day. I met him on two occasions. I went to his birthday party one time, too, at the park. And he said, the first time I met him, he's like, Mark, because he had a lot of energy. I mean, when he was younger, he was a character. And unfortunately, I saw him some of the Duck Room shows later on, and it was, you know, he was losing it a little bit. But he said, you're going to see something like you ain't never seen before. And he was right. And then the other thing, I always remember this, when I went to the park, and he played for his birthday party. You know, he performed at his birthday party. And, you know, you remember things when legends say them. And
well,
he said, I'm making music. M-O-N-E-Y. That's what he said. That was
brilliant.
Outstanding. Yeah,
absolutely brilliant.
So there's the story. But it was kind of cool going back through the old neighborhood, out in West
that
County.
Really
all those memories just pouring back in, Sue. That's what happened today.
How?
Well, let's talk about a few things as we get going. I'm excited because John Ziegler is coming on this afternoon. He's a good friend out in the Los Angeles area. He's a talk show host, also writes for Mediaite, and he wrote a piece a couple weeks ago about college sports that I invited John on the show last week, and we had him on, and that was the topic, college sports. And it was about 10 or 12 minutes into the conversation where I had to say, John, we're out of time. We haven't talked to you about one thing that we were going. That happens because Zig tends to kind of go on and on. So he's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. And Dave, keep me on track. I don't want to
sure will.
Because I want to make sure that I have plenty of time because he's a great conversation. I know he's going to have some things to say about COVID, and I'll circle back to that in just a second. I saw a story yesterday. And I have one of my experts is Dr. Roy Spencer, used to be at NASA. He's a climatologist. He's the principal research scientist at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. He's got a great website called drroyspencer.com. He is my go-to climate change guy. And he's not a denier. He knows the climate is changing, as I do. But we would be described as lukewarmers. We don't know how much we are causing it, and we certainly don't know how much we can do about it. So NASA is predicting, that was his former employer, a wobble in the moon's orbit. Sue, did you hear about this?
No, okay. You know I love this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so there's a wobble in the moon's orbit that may lead to record flooding on Earth. But in the story that I saw from CBS News yesterday, it also said, well, this is kind of hand-in-hand with climate change. So Roy's going to set all that straight. St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman later in the show. We have Senator Talent coming up as well, and we'll get a little British Open preview. On the COVID front, let me talk about that just for a second. When I was playing golf with my friend this morning, John asked me, because, and I think maybe I volunteered, I said, I think we're heading back to a very bad time with lockdowns and mask mandates. And I hope I'm wrong about that. But here, now I'll just read you the story. This is CNN, so they're going to skew it this way. One of the points that I made 2 days ago, and I think I repeated it yesterday, is that in Missouri, where we have surging cases, and I think this holds for other states too, although I haven't checked the numbers, I've only checked the numbers here, there are very few people who are dying from COVID. They're on ventilators or in the hospital. Now, that's not to say that in 2 or 3 weeks those numbers aren't going to spike, because there's a lag there, right? But I looked at the article from the Post-Dispatch the first time they put the fear porn out there on the front page of the paper, and that was about a month ago. So we're 4 weeks into the Delta variant panic here in Missouri. But here's the story from CNN, and I'm seeing more and more stories like this. Now, some of you might say, well, this is the media trying to scare people, and maybe that is the case. But it won't take a whole lot for these stories to resonate with people like Sam Page and Tashara Jones. Fortunately, here in Missouri, Mike Parson, who never laid down a mask mandate across the state to begin with, is not going to do that. But I do have this terrible feeling with these cases ramping up. So Here's the CNN story. Dr. Sergio Segarra says when COVID-19 patient numbers in the Miami hospital he works dipped below 20% last month, he began feeling optimistic. I remember seeing articles in the news about hospitals in California with empty COVID units. I longed for that experience. So he's the chief medical officer with Baptist Health's Baptist Hospital. He says it's an experience we were working our way towards that unfortunately has taken a rather sad turn. And that's basically what we're hearing from people in the healthcare professions down in the Springfield area, elsewhere in Missouri. And they talk about how since all this started with the variant a few weeks ago, the COVID numbers have tripled. The staff are treating more than 70 people. There's exponential growth. We're hearing this in a lot of states. Now you have increases in 40 different states, not just Missouri. Missouri was leading the way for a moment. You got 45% of the people in Florida fully vaccinated. The one thing that we know, and this isn't 100%, but we know that the overwhelming majority of people that are coming in are unvaccinated, the people on respirators. I heard this morning that there were three children, it was described, I was listening to Cam Wex, there were three kids on ventilators in the Springfield area. Dave, did you hear that at all?
No.
Okay.
Really?
Well, but here's my question about that. Not that that isn't concerning, but were they 13, 14, 15? Were they 5, 8, and 10? I think that's important. Did they have, you know, diabetes or things along those lines? I'd want to find out some of that information. So Mitch McConnell today, and this confuses me as well. We had a very impassioned debate a couple of days ago about why people aren't taking the vaccine. Here's the minority leader.
Yeah, I don't know how many times you all have heard me say this, but I'm a huge fan of vaccinations. As a polio victim myself when I was young, I've studied that disease. It took 70 years to come up with two vaccines that finally ended the polio threat. As a result of Operation Warp Speed, not one, not two, but three highly effective vaccines. And so I'm perplexed by the difficulty we have in finishing the job. If you're a football fan, we're in the red zone, but we're not in the end zone yet, and we need to keep preaching that getting the vaccine is important. Nobody knows more about that than Senator Blunt. I don't know if you want to add anything, Roy, to what I've said
here. And he did.
Is that you can't just expect that if everybody else is going to get the vaccine and somehow that's going to protect you. That actually might be the case, but we're at a critical moment here where the way to stop this is to be sure it has nowhere that it can continue to spread to other people. And my comment about the variants, you know, we know that this last variant is more viral. A number of people have had the vaccine got that variant because it is so viral, but none of them have died. And almost none of them have gone to the hospital. So you protect yourself. But what we don't want to do is let this drag on here or anywhere else in the world where a variant is developed that these vaccines aren't dealing with and have to start back right where we were again.
You know? Yeah, and that's the fear, and that's where I fear we are in the coming weeks. I hope I'm wrong about that. John Ziegler from L.A. coming up next, 97.1 FM Talk. Sue's News coming up after 4 o'clock. George Gray, tomorrow in studio. He's the voice of The Price is Right. We do a little thing here on 97.1 FM Talk called The Price is Wrong with George, and we have a lot of fun with it. So that's tomorrow in the 4 o'clock hour. Also, Kenny Hsu is coming up tomorrow. He wrote a great piece. He wrote a book that is just out, I think, yesterday or today, maybe, on the Asian experience in America and how some of the CRT stuff is really leaving them in a very strange place, and he's going to come on tomorrow night. My next guest was on last week, and we didn't talk about one thing that we were supposed to, so we've done it again here this afternoon. John Ziegler, who is with Mediaite, a fellow talk show host and podcaster. How are you, John?
I'm doing well. It's kind of like being a goalkeeper coming on your show and not knowing if you're playing hockey or soccer.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the deal. I have other things I want to talk to you about, but we're going to start with this because this ruling came down from the court regarding the NCAA and paying athletes. You wrote a piece called "Congratulations, Liberals, You Finally Destroyed Major College Sports." You're not a fan of what's happened here.
Well, that's an understatement. I believe it's the destruction of college sports. I think it will be eventually the end of college sports as we know it. For the record, I don't know that the Supreme Court ruling was all that relevant to the problems that I have with it. But it's interesting because when I say congratulations, liberals. I got a lot of pushback. Hey, you know, what about conservatives on the Supreme Court? There are some conservative commentators who like this idea of paying college athletes via the name and likeness loophole. And frankly, Mark, I am baffled by conservatives who have, I believe, been hoodwinked by this argument. I get that it feels capitalistic, right? I mean, you're being paid for your services in a free market. But that's not what this is. This is not a free market situation at all. This is a contrived market. And let's be clear, college athletes already are hugely compensated, and they're not employees, even the athletes. They are students who get full scholarships and all sorts of other perks and privileges because of their status as athletes. No one is forcing them to play sports in college. They are doing so for a number of reasons, including a free education at the, in big-time sports. But I believe that one of the main vulnerabilities of liberals, especially the woke crowd, is they are incredibly bad at understanding the concept of unintended consequences. And when you look up unintended consequences in the dictionary, there should be a picture of what's going to happen to college sports. I don't know how long it's going to take, but it's going to be a disaster. And I believe eventually it's going to sever the connection between the college fan and the sport and the institutions. Okay. And ironically enough, I believe that academia and the liberal sports media are going to pay the biggest price because they're going to end up losing college sports and all the money that comes with it.
So I'm not going to dismiss the eventual outcome that you predicted because that may very well happen. But the one thing that I don't agree with you on all this stuff, and you addressed this in the column, there is this notion that the players, and the star players in particular, are generating a lot of money for these football and basketball programs in particular.
Right, and that's a misperception. There are only a couple of very big name people in recent times who have really made a major economic difference, who really moved the needle. Ironically, one of them I mentioned in the piece is Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow clearly generated a ridiculous amount of money for the University of Florida. Guess who's vehemently against all this? Tim Tebow. Because Tim Tebow understands what the basis, the foundation of the passion people have for college sports is. It's the connection between the school and the community. It's not about the players. And the proof of this is, if the players suddenly decided, Mark, if the best college football and basketball players suddenly decide to create their own league, a minor league that, you know, was a funnel for the professional leagues, how do you think that would do financially? It would be a catastrophic failure. No one would care. Because it's the schools and the communities that are the foundation of why people care about college sports.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
It's the name on the front of the jersey, not the back of the jersey. So if you want to not play college sports, you want to start your own league to feed into the NFL or the NBA, good luck to you. But unfortunately, the liberal view of this, and by God, the sports media, which has proven something I've always been baffled by for decades. I started as a TV sportscaster, and I've always been mystified by how liberal sports media members are.
I'm confused by that, too. I never understood that. I still don't. Right.
Well, I have some theories on why that is, partially doing lack of intelligence and education, but it gets deeper than that. But the reality is that these guys have been promoting and campaigning for players to be paid, largely because they see it as a racial civil rights issue. You know, if black men are being paid, that somehow is inherently good. But the ramifications of this are going to be humongous in every possible way, from the competitive standpoint, from the perspective of corruption. I even think there are Me Too issues in women's sports that no one is thinking about that are going to be potentially scandalous. I mean, I can't think.
Okay, but you would say all of these things. Let's say that I'm trying to think of a good analogy or an example. You got a kid that's coming into my alma mater, the University of Missouri. He's going to be a star player. He's got an Instagram account, Twitter account. He's got all these followers. Someone wants to pay him to be an influencer. You have a problem with that?
Because of where it's going to lead.
Yeah.
Because there is no way to stop the corruption now. It's going to, and by the way, it's going to happen in so many different areas, but the first area it's going to happen is in competitive balance. I find it ironic this is all about fairness. Oh, it's fair. It's not fair to not pay these guys. You want to see unfairness? Look at the landscape of college sports in 5 years after this. You're going to have only a handful of teams that are going to be remotely competitive for national titles, because there will be certain schools, like in football and in an Alabama or a Kentucky in basketball, where the fan base is so large and so passionate, they're going to be able to pay via autographs or, you know, whatever, the Instagram account, you know, GoFundMe accounts, whatever. They're going to basically be able to pay backup
players.
Okay,
but wait, couldn't you
a salary?
All right, hang on, John. I'm thinking through this. Couldn't you also make the case? I could probably make a strong case that some of that happens now, with a limited amount of teams that are going to be able to compete in basketball and football.
It's going to get even more dramatic,
okay,
especially in football, where you've got, you know, 80 person rosters, and now the, you know, if you could make bank as a backup punter at Alabama,
right?
Better than you could as a quarterback of a lesser Division I team. How could you compete?
Because if the knock on some of the competitiveness right now would be you have these kids that know they're going to go to the NBA. The best players always want to go to Duke or KU or Kentucky. This is basketball, football, Alabama, LSU, no matter, Ohio State, you know, programs like that. They're not exactly dying to go to the University of Missouri, although our football program is developing in a very positive direction. Couldn't you make the case that with the and I don't know what form this is going to take, that now you have universities that can potentially offer things that those players might have thought they can only get in Alabama?
I think that there will be isolated situations, especially in basketball, where you can win a championship with, let's face it, two or three great players. I think that, you know, some rich booster is going to take a school from off the map and make them a contender by effectively making a professional team. But I think by and large, you're going to see the opposite, where the rich are going to get richer because they have fan bases that are willing to fund, and boosters that are willing to fund these players to a degree that is going to be ridiculous. And it's not going to be based, this is the key part from the anti-capitalistic argument, it's not going to be based on their value, Mark. It's going to be based on the buyer's desire to make their team a contender for a national championship. Once it becomes known which certain schools are the schools to go to where you're going to be able to make a salary that's basically a professional, who knows how much money, but it'll be a significant amount of money, and other schools, the University of Missouri, I'm sorry to tell you, is not, based upon my understanding of the situation there, is not going to be able to compete with the University of Alabama, even though they're in the same conference. It's just not going to be possible.
But we don't compete with them now.
Well, you're going to get clobbered even worse, because the guy that used to be, you know, a star running back and could play first string at the University of Missouri, this is obviously theoretical, is not going to be able to make more money as a second or third string running back at Alabama.
Okay, maybe, but I don't know that we know. I understand your points, and I know that you predicted this a long time ago, which is why I wanted to have you on, but I don't know that we know exactly how this is going to manifest itself.
Oh, look, nobody knows for sure, but I can't. here's what we absolutely know for sure. The essence of the game, the reason why college sports became popular to begin with, was that passion, was that connection between the school and the community. Now, Mark, think about this. The reasons why you choose your school as a top athlete have just been obliterated for all time. It used to be because you're from the area, or you have a family member that went there, or you've been a fan of that program all your life, or you know, whatever, you like the coach. Now it's just going to be, where can I make the most money?
Well, we'll see.
Who cares?
If that happens, then your prediction that this is the end of college sports as we know it absolutely will take place. But let me tap your brain on one more thing here, because you and I are in agreement on a lot of different things. And I started with a monologue this afternoon. We have, you know, spiking numbers here in Missouri. Nobody's dying, though. But don't you feel like we're heading back to lockdowns, the way that this is all being covered right now?
Oh, they're certainly wanting that. It's just amazing to me that we're even talking about such things when about 60% of the population, depending on where you live, is at least partially vaccinated, and where the number of deaths daily in the United States with COVID, and that's, by the way, with, as we both know, a distorted definition. But even if you accept that, we're barely over 200 deaths a day. That's about 100 more deaths with COVID per day than via traffic accidents.
Right, and
in
you
America.
Would think with the media coverage, you would think that we're being overrun again with deaths. Now, I get some of the hospitals are filling up, but. I don't know if people are going to, in Missouri, they're not going to stand for it. We never had a statewide mask mandate. You're very disadvantaged in California because they're always already talking about kids going to school with masks on, right?
That's apparently going to be the rule, which is, if, by the way, if I don't get arrested this school year, it's going to be a major upset because I mean, I am beyond furious that my 9-year-old daughter looks like she's going to be facing another year of useless masks. For the virus that she's not vulnerable to, where her teachers are all vaccinated. I mean, it's insanity.
And what's my sister was in town last week. She's in the Chicago area, so she's got different rules. She pulled up to my daughter's adventure camp, which is associated with our school district. And my daughter comes out, and she's 6. So we have kids that are similar age. And my sister said, wait, does she not need to wear masks at that? I'm like, nope, she does not. We haven't had that all summer. But I fear like it's coming back, Zig. We'll have to see.
Oh, no, they do not want this to end. The quote experts do not want this to end. They love this. This has given liberals everything they could have possibly ever dreamed of, from getting rid of Trump to instilling socialism to, you know, racial equity, which is not the same as equality. Also, this has been a bonanza for liberals. They're not going to let this go until they're forced to. And unfortunately, I've seen very little indication that most of the public is going to force them to stop.
John Ziegler writes for Mediaite. Love him. Passionate. I liked it. And we did something unique here. We talked about what we intended to talk about. I think that's great.
Awesome. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much. We have Sue's News coming up here after the top of the hour. And I also have a fascinating musical topic for you right before Sue's News.
I'm intrigued by this.
So there's a song. What I do with music, I love music. And when I hear a song, especially a new song, I think we do this. Our brains are like, oh, play it on repeat. And I'll wake up with the song melody in my head. So there's a song like that I've latched onto. But
wait.
Then I Googled it, and I found the background is fascinating.
So what you're saying is you're going to infect us with an earworm.
Not necessarily, because you may hate the song.
Oh, okay.
But
that doesn't mean it won't.
I'm just
going to
say, listen, it's a good story, even if you hate the song. We'll play it for you after 4 o'clock. So I saw this story from CBS News yesterday, scaring the hell out of people. Every coast in the U.S. is facing rapidly increasing high tide floods thanks to a wobble in the moon's orbit. Working in tandem, of course, you have to have this. It was almost like an editor wouldn't let this line not be tossed in there. Working in tandem with climate change fueled rising sea levels. Dr. Roy Spencer is back with me this afternoon. He used to work for NASA. He's the principal research scientist at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. Dr. Spencer, always great to have you on. How are you?
Good to be with you, Mark. Doing good.
Set us straight on this story. So, because I never know what to believe, I figure you'd have an opinion here on the wobble.
Yeah, so I had to read up on it when I heard about it, just to see what they were talking about, because I'm familiar with the concepts, and it's actually something I hadn't heard of before. But it's actually nothing new. People have been talking about it for quite a few years now. There's a cycle in the orbit of the moon around the Earth that's 18.6 years long. It's pretty well understood. And basically what this cycle does is it causes the tides to go from being more extreme to less extreme. So when you're in a part of the cycle, you're going to have really high tides, really low tides. But then 9 years later, the tides on average are high tides are going to be lesser and the low tides are going to be lesser. Okay. So the size of this cycle, its effect on ocean tides and sea level, or I should say just the ocean tides. It's just a tidal thing. Okay. So the effect of this is to basically offset sea level rise for the last like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So actually this is something hasn't happened yet. What they're talking about is in the 2030s, we are going to be in the lunar cycle where we are going to go towards more moon-forced, you know, lunar-forced, stronger high tides through the 2030s that on top of sea level rise will make areas that are prone to high tide flooding they're going to get a lot more flooding then. So we're talking basically 10 years down the road. For the next 4 years, four, five, 6 years, we're still in the part of the lunar cycle where it's the moon is actually offsetting sea level rise in terms of the impact on high tides.
Okay, but then the double whammy is in all the stories they say when the moon returns to the tide amplifying cycle, the seas will have had nearly a decade to rise. By that time, Greta Thunberg told me the planet's not going to exist, but will this make it worse?
Well, it's a matter of degree. The average amount of sea level rise, and this is global average, is about 1 inch per decade. What? Maybe a little more than that in the last few decades. That's sort of a controversial point right now, whether it's 1 inch per decade or, say, 1.2 inches per decade. So, you know, in another 10 years' time, when this becomes an issue, we will have added, let's say, another inch and a half to sea levels. And then you're going to have this big lunar imposed amplification of the high tides. And of course, you know, what causes sea level rise? I think it's mostly natural since it's been occurring since we started measuring sea level from tide gauges back in the mid-1800s. It's been rising at an inch per decade ever since then. And like I said, it might be 1.2 inches per decade now. So that, you know, 0.2 inches per decade might be our fault. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, you know, and I'm pretty bad, Roy, at clock management, as we call it here in the radio business. I should have left myself more time because I saw, and I haven't dug into this and had a chance to talk about it on the air, but I'm sure you saw, did you see the research at Leeds University about climate change from a couple of weeks ago?
Well, you'd have to be more...
Okay, so what they, and this is something you've talked about for years. So basically the takeaway from this, it was the Leeds Sustainability Research Institute explaining decent living standards cannot be met with everything that's being called for to adapt to climate change. So basically the study said that the current economic system, no country in the world accomplishes that, not even close. It appears that our economic system is fundamentally misaligned with the aspirations of sustainable development. So you can have one or the other. You can say that's basically bottom line. You can save the planet or you can have air conditioning. You can't have both.
Yeah, that's basically true. And a lot of us have known that for a long time.
Right.
You know, engineers have known that. Scientists have known that. Yeah, there's no easy way to fix the problem to the extent that a problem exists because we don't have access to abundant, affordable energy other than through fossil fuels. I mean, nuclear is the second best if you're going to talk about electricity. At least that.
Well,
would
and, that, and by the way, that's what we should be talking about. But as I kind of had to let you go here, but this is important, and you have been talking about this for years, and you've talked about it in terms of poor people in nations where they could use energy. This study said Americans will have to cut their energy use by more than 90%, and families of four should live in housing no larger than 640 square feet.
Whoa!
We're heading in that direction, right, Roy? Good luck with that. We'll have you back. Thank you, Dr. Roy Spencer. We'll see you.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.